Let's call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 1:33 p.m. Thursday, May 12th. Present today, we have Senator Michicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Myers, which gives us a quorum to conduct business. Staff of the committee today, as always, is Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records. Talia is back as our moderator, and Michaela Anderson is my committee aide. At this time, we're going to be hearing HB 104, the Refined Fuel Surcharge Bill, from Representative Josephson. This is the first time hearing the bill. We're going to hear from the bill's sponsor, take some invited and public testimony, and we've got a couple of amendments, and my intent is to move the bill from committee today. With that, I would like to welcome Representative Josephson and staff to the table to present the bill and respond to questions from the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Myers. Andy Josephson, District 17. It's the UMed in Anchorage. With me is Elise Soren-Burke, and when she speaks, she will introduce herself. Before you is the House version of, obviously, House Bill 104. I'll talk quickly and then answer any questions that you might have. The bill began as a bill to double the motor fuel tax. It was a Xerox copy of Senator Bishop's bill from the previous legislature, and I believed, as did the Alaska Trucking Association and others, that we needed to do better by our maintenance of highways and roads. That bill was politically viable until it wasn't, and in the wisdom of the Finance Committee, they deleted the tax increase and left a surcharge, which is part of why we're here today, I think a large part. And then on the House floor, they unanimously, we suspended the motor fuel tax from 8 cents to zero until next summer. So that's where we're here. And I wanted to tell you something about the surcharge. The Senate President, Senator Michicki, in 2015, I'll tell you, is willing to take on tough tasks. And he did it then by trying to help Spill Prevention Response Unit of the Department of Environmental Conservation through SB 86. And what they did was, rather than increase the nickel a barrel tax on throughput through TAPS, we created a surcharge on wholesale, at the wholesale level of refined fuels, all refined fuels. The bill was mirrored roughly in House Bill 158 from Kathy Munoz. That became the vehicle eventually, and so here we are. This bill fundamentally would increase the refined fuel tax from 0.095 to 0.015 cents per gallon. For an urban driver, that's a sort of de minimis $4 or even less. You can sort of, in your mind's eye, increase that if you're a rural driver and if you have snow machines, et cetera. And so one of the benefits of this bill is you can look at a constituent, if they say, what about our environment? You can say, I did this very important thing. It's now going to help finance the operation of the Spill Prevention Response Unit. We're all going to cooperate as Alaskans. And if they say, well, geez, I don't spill things, you can say, have you been to a gas station? And are you aware that some of them do spill things? And so we're all unwittingly part of this. And so we all need to be part of the fix. And if they think, well, this sounds like a new kind of tax, there's a net benefit for an urban driver in the range of about $36, because this moratorium would be for a year. That's about $40 for a sedan or a small car. And so they're going to come out ahead at least for the year. The principle behind this was supported by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. At the time, Senator Michicki offered it and Representative Munoz. We don't know of any, we've received no letters of criticism. It's very important also to a nonprofit that is federally mandated called the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which is the watchdog for that vast area. And I think that sort of is everything. And if there's any questions I can answer, I'd be happy to try.
Okay. Well, if you've got a sectional or something, let's go through that and then we'll take care of questions.
All right. I turn to Ms. Soren-Burke.
Thank you. For the record, Elise Soren-Burke. Good afternoon, Chair Myers and members of the committee. I will start with a sectional analysis and then I'll briefly go through a summary of changes, though Rep. Josephson summarized the changes to this bill fairly aptly in his introduction. So, Section 1 of the bill before you amends the refined fuel surcharge found in AS 43.40.005A from $0.0095 to $0.015 per gallon, so raising it to just under a cent to 1 cent per gallon on refined fuel sold, transferred, or used in the state. Section 2 of the bill suspends the tax on motor fuels, which is found in AS 43.40.101 A and B. This suspension will take effect on the first day of the month following the effective date of the bill and will expire on June 30th, 2023. This section also contains a provision which requires dealers to reduce fuel costs by the amount of the suspended tax. Section 3 is transitional language that allows the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations needed to implement the tax pause. Section 4 provides for an immediate effective date for Sections 2 and 3 of the bill, so the tax holiday. And Section 5 is the effective date of Section 1 of the bill, which is January 1st, 2023.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Joseph,
thank you. I've omitted something that is pretty fundamental, and that is why. Why is this surcharge necessary? I touched on it, but it deserves more treatment than that. It's necessary because throughput that was anticipated at the time of the creation of the surcharge 7 years ago is not what it was. At the time, Senator Michicki and Senator Stevens noted that there may have to be some adjustment up, so this is no great surprise. The department and the state, I guess, writ large, would prefer that it was self-funding. And for the first time this year, we've had to dip into UGF, and part of that is there's sort of a dispute about how the sweep impacts the prevention account in particular, and also the response, really the prevention account, not the response account. So this is designed to keep it self-sufficient, and at the trend we're going on, the remaining balances, to the effect they haven't been swept, will be depleted in a short matter of years. And I would note that the department commissioner twice has indicated on the record that he supports the bill.
You mean DEC commissioner?
Correct.
Okay, just double checking. Alrighty, Senator Michicki.
Sorry, just to correct for the record, you said from just under a penny, which was a fun thing to say back when we passed this the first time, less than a penny to a penny and a half, you said a penny. Right, so a penny and a half. And we were aware there were some fuels that were not ended up being exempt from this through some of the exemptions that led to part of the shortfall, and we thought we would have to take another look at it. So I just the logic of why we didn't do the per barrel, which is the same reason we're not now. And so a lot of people don't recognize that one of the largest sources of spills in the state is home heating oil. Right. So, yeah, and these funds are often used to help with those cleanups from a grandmother that doesn't have another way to or can't afford the cleanup. It's also dependent on by industry for federal requirements associated with seed plants and things like that. So it's a really valuable fund. The industry is paying their part and then some. And we just felt that as a user fee, I'm a believer in those that picking up part of the cost for those that are responsible for the lion's share of the spills, the vast majority of the spills. So I appreciate that it had, unfortunately, it has to be adjusted, but I appreciate that. It's 1.5 cents a gallon. And I understand why you brought it forward. We've thought about putting it into other bills as we saw that things were getting tighter and tighter, but this is a necessary fund. They do an excellent job as far as a great division, and Representative Joseph, I appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you.
All righty. Senator Keel, any questions? So I had one question on the fuel tax holiday provision. I can support it in concept. My question, I had a couple of people bring up to me that we've done this once before. What was this, about 2010, 2011, I think, off the top of my head. The concern was whether or not we make sure, if there's a way to make sure that that is making it to the consumer rather than just being, instead of 8 cents going to the state, it turns into 8 cents going to the retailer. Is there any way to make sure that that's what's happening?
The language reflects that. Andy Josephson, for the record, and Ms. Hornberg will speak to it.
Okay.
Chair Meyer, Elise Sornberg, for the record. So if you look at page 1, lines 13 and 14, and then page 2, line 1, there is language saying, quote, during the suspension, a dealer or user of refined fuel shall reduce the cost of fuel to the final consumer by an amount equal to the amount of the tax suspended under this section.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course, it begs the question whether it's really going to happen and who's going to monitor it and all those things. But we have our fingers crossed.
Fair enough. Enforcement is always an issue, regardless of what legislation we're passing. So, Senator Machicki.
What is the fiscal note? We are paying out a very healthy PFD this year, whether it's the current or there's some change. And I recognize people are having a difficult time, but these dollars go to things like road maintenance and snow removal and things like that. So what is the fiscal note and how do we make up that gap that's created with the holiday?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I know this number sort of by memory. It's in the range of, I think, $37 million. And so that would have to come out of UGF. And a few days ago, that seemed like not a major problem. But we're spending more. And so I have some concerns about that. And frankly, in terms of I haven't been at the pay grade where those final questions are answered by attaching a fiscal note to a conference report, and I don't know if we're going to have a conference report. So I'm not sure that I can answer specifically how that dot will be connected.
Okay.
But clearly the DOT will need its $37 million from another source.
Regardless, yes. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the conversation went there, so I may as well join in. I guess the question becomes why the refined fuels surcharge goes up, why the response fund or the prevention funds, the nickel barrel, are expected to be self-supporting when the highway maintenance and or match for federal highway funds aren't. Why not support the response from prevention funds with, what would that be, roughly 6 or 7 to 1 GF, the way we do for road maintenance and matching federal highway dollars?
Well, through the chair, I think I see where you're going right at the end there. Fundamentally, you're saying why the difference in how we pay for things. And I think that the case was made by Senator Machicki and Representative Munoz that 75 to 80% of the spills are done by Alaskans and even their governments and schools and all the rest. And AOGA was cleaning up a lot of those that they weren't responsible for, not anywhere near responsible for. And so they said, we're not going to participate anymore, unless you make us, of course, but we're not going to involve ourselves in this. And that sounded reasonable. And so that's what we're trying to supplement. And DEC doesn't have a lot of UGF dollars. Some of this is cultural. You know, sort of what we're used to. And we're used to funding, highway maintenance with some tax revenue, but it was the will of the House, without objection, that be suspended for a year. And I'm very confident the administration supports it. Other states are doing it. Gasoline prices are remarkably high. I think there would have been more objections if it had been a permanent change. I don't know if that quite gets to your question. It may not. But.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the words in response. I guess, you know, it's individuals who punch through guardrails and knock down street lamps and incur significant maintenance cost to the state, and it's individuals' car studded tires that wear through the asphalt and so on and so forth. And yet AOGA or the investment accounts certainly, you know, pay, it's ballpark 6 or 7 to 1. So I think maybe what you hit on Mr. Chairman, what the sponsor hit on was about it being cultural, is really what's at issue here. And I note that the cost of the surcharge was expressed in terms of tanks of vehicle fuel as opposed to tanks of home heating oil, where it's purchased hundreds and hundreds of gallons at a time.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think my staffer wanted to contribute something to that discussion.
Through the chair, Elise Swinburke, for the record. So, Representative Keel, it also is a question of a statutory imperative. If you look at AS 46.08.030 in your statute books, there is a statement of legislative intent. And I'll just read, it is the intent of the legislature and declared to be the public policy of the state that funds for the abatement of a release of oil or a hazardous substance will always be available. So that kind of speaks to why we need to always have funds available for spill prevention and response.
And Mr. Chairman, Andy Josephson, Title 29, 6500 has similar language involving the importance and a legislative conclusion of the importance of the oil hazard and hazardous substance municipal program in particular.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Machicki?
So do we have someone on from the SPAR program that can talk about all the elements of the SPAR program, because it's not just response. A lot of it is about education and prevention. I think part of the – so when we went through this, we – kind of added up all the costs of the producers. So this is a smaller state-funded, industry-funded previously. We recognized what the industry was investing, not only here, but in their dues. And they also have their own response organizations where they spend tens of millions of dollars a year. They're responsible for their own spills. And when we looked at those, you know, tens of millions of other dollars that each company is spending in many different places aside from their dues and their support for CERCAC and Prince William Sound, RCAC, the different RCACs, and the infrastructure that they have to keep in place, we felt that they were not only adequately but kind of over-investing on their own exposure. And we looked at this exposure where they had literally no ability to control, and we felt like there should be some personal responsibility from the users of the other hydrocarbons that cause other spills not related to the production of oil and gas. So we felt like it was a fair mix, them being responsible for their impacts and a large part of the non-producer impacts, and the actual end users being at a much lesser degree somewhat responsible for theirs. So that's how we arrived at that point. And I have to say that it was Representative Munoz's bill that was the first tax increase in like 40 years in the state of Alaska, because mine didn't pass. So you should use hers more than you use mine, but you know.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, to echo what President Machicki said, in a hearing in March of 2015, he noted that $170 million was spent annually by the oil industry on spill prevention response and related cleanup activity, and that they had a half billion in response assets. And again, 75 to 80% of active spills are responsibility of Alaskans writ large. There was discussion in the House about trying to allocate to each user group. It's fundamentally impractical. And what you need is the source of funds to respond, because people die. You know, you could own a dry cleaning store and pass away and you've left a spill, or they can't be found, or they don't have the deep pockets necessary to clean up. So that's why we're here.
Okay. All right. To answer your question, Senator Machicki, we do have somebody from DEC online if you did want to ask them something specific.
Yeah, actually, Mr. Chairman, I'd love to hear from Tiffany just of the different elements, because I think it would give a greater, for those that may be listening or folks here, it may give a kind of better idea of what SPAR does on the proportion that's spent on prevention versus response and just the good work that they do. It's I'm very supportive of SPAR. They've been an amazing organization for a long time, but I think it'd be a great opportunity for the committee to understand what they do.
Ms. Larson, if you can hear us, if you could put yourself on the record.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Senators. For the record, Tiffany Larson, Director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response with DEC.
And your location, please?
I'm located in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. And if you could just kind of give us the you know, very, very broad, very high-level overview of the activities at your agency.
Not a problem. The elevator pitch for what SPAR does is vast and varied. But for a quick overview, approximately 70% of SPAR's operating budget comes from the prevention account. And that funds work such as prevention planning, so working with industry to talk about ways we can avoid spills. Response planning, working with industry when there is a release, or in some of the examples provided earlier, the constituent or the home heating fuel tank that had a release, or like there's a flood in Manly right now. We have staff out there providing aid and checking on vapor issues. So our activities are vast and varied. Let's see, we covered prevention, we covered response, preparedness. So planning for when something could happen. So there's a big difference between talking about something and when it actually happens. So we do spend a large amount of energy working with industry on planning for what we do if something happens and what we do more specifically in your situation. If you have a tank farm or you have a refinery, what are the areas that are at risk near you? Are there homes near you? And what would we do if the catastrophic happened? And we talk about that regularly with industry and at a five-year interval when their plan reviews come up. In addition to that, we have a contaminated sites program that oversees the remediation of contaminated sites and manages those sites across the state. There's approximately 2,400 of those and works on contaminants of emerging concern across the state. And then we have a response fund administration program that manages these funds that we're talking about and provides all the support to the prevention preparedness response program and contaminated sites program to continue to do that work I just spoke about.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that overview. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Ms. Larson, how many? So I know now we've essentially excavated every filling station in the state of Alaska, some, of course, replacing with containers, vessels that are less subject to corrosion. But you've been very active in that through the years. What percentage, just kind of a ballpark, do you think still remain of the old style, more corrosive refined fuel storage tanks are around the state, either underground or above?
We do have an underground storage tank program component that exists in our contaminated sites program. I would like to avail myself of the opportunity to provide that response post-committee. I have those staff are in meetings right now and unable to attend to answer that question for me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm being called to House Finance. May I be excused?
Please. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. No problem. All right. With that, I do believe we have a little bit of testimony. I can see Jason Werner is online. Mr. Werner, if you could hear us, could you please provide? Oh, I'm sorry. Correct. Thank you. So I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony. Public testimony is open. So I've got Mr. Werner online. If you could provide your name, your affiliation, and your location, and then provide any testimony you have.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman Myers and members of the committee. My name is Jason Werner. I am the CFO and appearing on behalf of Petromarine Services, and I am in Anchorage right now.
Thank you, sir. Please proceed.
And, you know, to start, where Petromarine is neutral on the current version of this bill. However, we do have a proposed amendment for the committee to consider on a May 5th letter to the committee. Our President Kurt Lindsey provided some specifics on some proposed changes. And essentially, Petromarine brings fuel from the Seattle area, Puget Sound on a U.S. haul, and into Skagway, and the fuel is then trucked into Canada. So the way the excise tax works is we're exempt from the excise tax, but we're subject to this fuel surcharge. Now, in contrast, if a Canadian hold barge brought fuel from Vancouver into Skagway and had it trucked, it would be exempt from the fuel surcharge. So we're also competing against the fuel we truck into Whitehorse. There are trucks bringing fuel in from Edmonton. So what we're trying to do is level the playing field and basically not penalize us because, you know, we're using we're bringing domestic fuel on a domestic haul in, and it's very similar, although we have to pay that fuel surcharge. So essentially to level the playing field for us. And in the fuel industry, especially in wholesale, you know, it's a game of pennies, as they say. And when there's cost increases and we're dealing with exchange rate between Canada, it gets really complex. So any relief we could get would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Werner. Yes, we did get your letter. I believe Senator Michiki is carrying your amendment today. So thank you for your testimony. Seeing nobody else online, is there anybody in the room who would wish to testify on HB 104? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Pretty straightforward with that. We're going to go ahead and move on to amendments for now. And we'll start with amendment labeled I.A.1. And we'll call that amendment number one. And that one is by Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move Amendment 1.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. Our conversation earlier about how much users pay and how much the state pays, what Amendment 1 does is after the motor fuel tax holiday, it brings the motor fuels tax back and gradually increases it to add the 8 cents a gallon over a period of 3 years. and it also puts in place a registration surcharge on battery electric vehicles, a different one on the plug-in hybrid, so that everybody is paying for the maintenance of our asphalt highways. It certainly doesn't get us up to anything like what the response funds or the prevention funds would get, but it would gradually over time double what the state, what users of our asphalt highways, actually any of our highways, pay in through the motor fuel tax, roughly get us up to 2/3 of what it costs to match the federal transportation dollars. Or if you want to look at it from the other direction, I think it would roughly get us up ballpark to about 2/3 of what it would cost to do our highway maintenance, our M&O, for the three regions. Those are very rough numbers. Let's see. I want to make sure there are a couple of conforming pieces in here just to make sure that we don't upset the apple cart on the a few special permits that exist, nothing hidden in there, but it would fundamentally take the fuel tax to 11 cents starting in July of 23, 14 cents in July of 24, reaching 16 cents in July of 25.
Okay, thank you, Senator Michiki. Senator Keel, got that very backwards. Thank you, Senator Keel.
I'm not wearing facial hair.
Okay, I have no way to respond to either of those questions. All right, Senator Michiki.
So I've not seen this in advance. I'm inclined to not at this time want to increase. I fundamentally supported the increase a few years back. don't know that the right message right now is that we're going to be increasing fuel tax. I understand that he's that the maker of the amendment is phasing it in over time. I think people are a little bit disturbed at the price of hydrocarbons right now. They won't recognize that this is something that steps up as things sort of normalize. We don't know what normalize means. I like the first section of this amendment. I think it's really important, and it's the way that many states are going. Alternative fuel and electric vehicles use our highways. They need the road snow plowed, maintained. They also use studded tires. They use the highways the same way that we do in gasoline or diesel powered vehicles, and they should be paying their share. I think this is a good start on $100. It'd be interesting to see what we think the average cost on a state tax is per vehicle now. I assume it's somewhat similar. But the reason, of course, why the hybrid vehicle pay half of the electric is they're also using gasoline, so they're partially paying for their... And, of course, we encourage the use of alternative vehicles and electrical vehicles, and it's growing rapidly. I think that's the right way to go. Can you explain Section 2, Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I have a staff member in the room who can do the technical bit. I believe this has to do with that rare critter, the special traction permit.
Please.
For the record, this is Kathy Schlingheit, staff to Senator Keel. Mr. Chair, in answer to Senator Michicki's question, yes, this is a conforming section, so there is a fee for a special individual traction permit in existing law to use studded tires when they're not in season. And that fee is tied to your registration fee. And this change says that that doesn't include a special fee for an electric vehicle. So someone with an electric vehicle would say, pay the same fee as someone with a regular fuel vehicle.
All righty. Thank you, Ms. Schlingheit. Senator Michicki, something on your mind, sir?
Yeah, I can't support the other sections of this bill at this time. I appreciate him, the senator bringing it forward, and I would likely support this in the future as things normalize. I think it's the wrong message right now. So I object to this amendment, but I'd be willing to move a conceptual amendment if we think this amendment's going to fail, but I'll see where it goes.
I will... I am in a bit of an interesting spot on this amendment. My industry is for it, and my constituents are against it, which puts me in a very interesting place. I would tend to agree that it does send us a very interesting message if we pass a bill that has a tax holiday and then an immediate tax hike right afterwards. It's a little bit of mixed messaging going on there. So I see where you're going with that. So Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I certainly wouldn't object. There was discussion of a conceptual amendment if we wanted to bring it in at back at 8 cents in 23, so it comes back flat and then start the step up in 24. It doesn't bother me.
So, Senator Michicki, what was on your mind?
What was on my mind, and I'm not sure what happens on page 2 with line 22 through 24 because I haven't looked that far, but I am in support of section 1 and 2. So I'm in support of everything on page 1, 2, line 20 on page 2. It'd be nice to know what lines 22 to 24 do.
Senator Keel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's just renumbering existing sections of the bill. It's not, no substantive change.
That's correct. To account for the addition of a new section 2 at page 2, line 4.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, I believe that we are at some point going to have to increase our fuel tax. Mm-hmm. It's a very conservative philosophy that the more of services you use, the more you pay. A fuel tax is a very direct user fee. I'm okay with that. I don't think that this is the right time. So I'm going to move a conceptual amendment to amendment number one, and that would be eliminating everything after line 25 on page 2.
All right, and I will object for purposes of discussion to the conceptual amendment. Okay. Senator Keel is the original amendment maker. Curious as to your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question to the senator who spoke just before me would be when he would suggest that take effect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My assumption would it be that it would match the effective date of this bill,
which I believe is July 1.
It has some immediate provisions and it has some January 1 provisions.
January 1.
Mr. Chairman, I guess it's similarly jarring to me to suggest that we're going to have a motor fuel tax holiday and implement a registration fee increase for non-motor fuel vehicles in the middle of it. That's the same sort of mixed messaging that I think was objected to just a little bit ago.
Fair enough, and I mean, my immediate thought to that is, I guess some of it's going to depend on what part of the state you're in. For some parts of the state that rely a little bit more on fossil fuels for their electric, then I could see where that could be some mixed messaging. For other parts of the state that rely, for example, more on hydro or other renewables, that seems less of an issue to me. Because we've seen the costs of electric coming from fossil fuels fluctuate just as much as we've seen the cost of the fossil fuels themselves fluctuate. But if the electric isn't coming from fossil fuels, then that's going to stay relatively constant if memory serves. And so that hasn't those folks getting their electricity from the non-fossil fuels wouldn't have been seeing some of the price jumps that folks getting their electric from the fossil fuels would be seeing. But just my immediate thoughts to that. So, Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, I'm more than willing to include in this conceptual amendment that the effective date will be June 20th of 2023 when the fuel holiday comes off, if that is more appetizing to the maker of the original amendment. That means that when the fuel holiday comes off, the biennial fee is enacted as well.
That makes a lot more sense to me.
Okay, sounds good. So then the conceptual amendment then is to take everything from page 2, line 26, and remove it, and the effective date of the new sections 1 and 2 would then be June 30 of next year. Is that just summarizing what we're agreeing on here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's my intent of the conceptual amendment.
Okay. With that, I will go ahead and remove my objection to the conceptual amendment. Seeing no further objection, the conceptual amendment passes. That brings us back to the original amendment number 1. With that,
very briefly, Mr. Chairman, you know, I drive one of these things, and as was said before, I need the roads plowed. I got some teenagers. I need the guardrails in really good shape, or at least as good as anybody else does.
Fair enough. All righty. With that, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number 1 as amended. Seeing no further.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I objected as well, so I'll remove my objection.
Okay.
Number 1 as amended.
All right. All right. Seeing no further objection to amendment number one as amended, amendment number one passes, which as amended. Which then moves us on to amendment number two, labeled I.A.2. And I believe this is Senator Michikis.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Yeah, I have no relationship with Petro Marine. I poured through the information they provided, and we got information from the department. The information matched. The bottom line is we're working against Alaska and U.S.-owned companies in favor of Canadian-owned companies, and I think it's a fairness issue. This amendment simply eliminates the refined fuel tax surcharge to fuel that is consigned to a foreign country. So you heard that example. This has a fiscal note of approximately between 4% and 5% of the annual surcharge collections, considering that this bill is going to bring in about $10 million annually and SPAR needs between $8 and $8.5 million, even allowing for some growth in demand. It leaves a surplus of $1 million or more. To me, it's just a fairness issue. I want Alaskan and U.S. companies to be on a level playing field with foreign companies, even if we don't think of Canadians as being foreign. They are. And I think it's the fair thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do.
Fair enough. I just want to state for the record, for those listening at home, I did have a couple conversations with people about this amendment prior to committee. In the past, I have personally hauled fuel out of North Pole down to Whitehorse. Very little of that going on currently. The fuel market's changed somewhat, but any of that that does occur, and if it picks up again, just for the record, that is also going to be exempted as is being sold outside of the country as well. So it's not just for shipping up through the inside passage. It also applies other places, but as of right now, not very often. So, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we get clarity on the revenue estimate? I was looking at the revenue fiscal note, and I think I thought I understood a different number. At the first full year of implementation, what would be the added income as a result of increasing the surcharge?
Senator Michikis?
Well, I was including the entire, so not the increase. I was including what the program will receive annually. Oops. Sorry for that.
Okay.
Misunderstanding. I may have said it strangely.
All right. Senator Keel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree with the need for parity. Our tax policy, wherever possible, should not create competitive disadvantages. I might have gone the other direction to parity, but I don't object to this amendment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. With that, seeing no other discussion, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection to amendment number two. And seeing no further objection, amendment number two passes, which brings us back to the original bill as amended. And, yes. All right, any other discussion on the bill before we take action? Seeing none. All right. Senator Michikis, do you have a motion for us?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the CS for House Bill number 104, Finance, as amended, 32-LS0444/I.A, from committee with the attached committee recommendations and fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection.
And I should say forthcoming revised fiscal notes. I just saw the motion here. So.
Oh, thank you. All right. And seeing no objection, House Bill 104 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to complete out the paperwork. All right, back on the record. Seeing no other business before the committee today, that concludes our meeting, and we are adjourned at 2:19 p.m. Thank you.